Earlier this summer, I hosted a five-day virtual summit that was about navigating the future of entertainment. And I had some of the most amazing conversations with some of the most brilliant minds that I've ever met in my 10-plus years of podcasting. Now, when it comes to navigating our uncertain future as artists, as creatives, and storytellers, I do not pretend to have all the answers. And frankly, I'm not sure I have any of them. But what I can promise is that few are working hard to try and figure out where we are going next and how it is that we stay relevant while also staying sane. The following is my summit interview with Nick Milo. He's the creator of the popular YouTube channel Linking Your Thinking, and we talk all about how to better organize our thoughts and work with the machine so that we can be more creative instead of less creative. Nick, my friend, it is wonderful to have you back once again, you and I having this conversation to today talk all about the world as both of us see the world in multiple Venn diagrams. And today is going to be about the Venn diagram of here we have the creatives, here we have the creators. And one of the main themes of this entire five-day summit is how do we find the overlap of these two areas? Because I believe the future of entertainment lies somewhere in that overlap. And I really believe that rather than seeing ourselves as separate ecosystems, we're the Hollywood creatives over here. Oh, we're the YouTube creators over here. There's tremendous value in that intersection. You live directly at the epicenter of the intersection of those Venn diagrams. So I just wanted to thank you once again for having the willingness to do round two, given that you and I also did a podcast a little over a year ago. So thank you once again, Nick.
Yeah, thanks, Zach. I mean, without hesitation, I'm happy to be here. And I'm happy to share any wisdom and just kind of bandy around ideas, because I think it's a very exciting time. It's very terrifying too, though, especially for creatives, figuring out what does creator mean to me and all that. And there are ways to navigate it that it can feel internally very good and like you are aligned with who you already are. So I definitely want to approach some of that, some of this world from that angle. Yeah.
And I can tell you, and I'm sure that you can maybe not relate to it, but I think you can understand it having lived in the Hollywood creative space for many years, that for a lot of people in the creative space, when you say the words content and creator, it's like, right? Like it's like saying a four-letter word out loud. And I want throughout the course of today's conversation for you to help dispel some of those myths, because I really believe that there's just so much value in these two groups helping each other. And frankly, I'm not sure we have a lot of choice. And as I've said throughout the summit, I frankly don't have any of the answers about where we're going next, but damn it, I'm going to work pretty hard to talk to the people that I think can help us find those answers. And I think your journey is both an inspiring one and also one that can help provide us with the tools to navigate all of this, you know, just massive amounts of information, massive amounts of uncertainty and otherwise. So just to set the table a little bit, I want to talk a little bit about your jack of all trades journey, because you have done so many different things. You and I originally connected, I think you were one of my COVID kids or around there, where you'd come
before.
Or even before COVID, that's mm-hmm. right. But you'd come into my community at the time where I was helping those that were creative, specifically at that point in post-production. And now I've broadened far beyond post-production and even entertainment and just helping creatives in general figure out how can I navigate this career pivot? How can I find more meaning and purpose in my work? And you had come to me really trying to figure out how do I transition into that editing chair? But even before you were in the Hollywood creative space, you did a bunch of other stuff. So let's just start to connect some of these random dots, quote unquote, random dots that kind mm-hmm. of define Nick as a jack of all trades that are going to eventually lead us to you becoming the creator of Linking Your Thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll be quick in such a way that we can like touch back to them as we need to. But I don't want to go on and on about, you know, my stuff. But I grew up in Montana. I played college football at a small college. We were pretty successful at that level. We won 3 national championships. And as that was winding down, I decided to do something I never did before. And that was to audition for a theater play at the college. So this willingness to kind of go into something I wasn't good at was something that started, you know, it was always there and it started to come to the surface more. That opened up a different window. And then after college, 2 paths kind of happened at the same time. One, I had an undergrad in civil engineering just because I happened to be decent enough at math. I did that for about a year, but there was something else that was going on with one of my friends and teammates. It was a fitness boxing business. So just actually teaching mostly women how to box. And that was essentially because my friend and founder, I was the co-founder, but his mom and then eventually my mom and a bunch of women would get together and box. And then they said, what do you want to call your, we asked, what do you want to call yourself? And they said, Pink Gloves Boxing. And then we wrapped that into a business that we could sell to health clubs. And then it worked best with universities. And it was a martial art, you know, how they all have a belt system. Well, hey, let's have that for boxing because it was missing from boxing itself. Also during that same time, I produced and acted in two indie feature films in Montana. So outside of the industry, had no clue about like how to navigate the industry. Went to New York, trying to make Pink Gloves Boxing bigger, trying to find my way, all that stuff. And then 3 years there, and then came over to Los Angeles. The boxing business had kind of plateaued. It's still in operation, but I could tell it just wasn't going to get over, like become this huge thing. So then I thought, with my partner coming here to teach at UCLA, I thought, okay, here's a great time to finally fulfill a dream and enter the entertainment industry. So instead of having all the answers with all these entrepreneurial efforts, I started at the bottom as a post-production assistant. And yeah, we all know what that's like. So I was getting people coffee. I was driving around Santa Monica Boulevard with like soggy cheeseburgers that had tomatoes on them. So I had to go back all the way across town. Just really humbling myself. And again, it was an environment where I just wanted to learn. And so after some time, I was kind of working my way up. I had got to an assistant editor. That's when I found you. And I was like, I want to get to the editor chair. Like 9 months later, I got my first editing credit. Around that same time, COVID was starting. And then I just started sharing something else that I was always passionate about, taking and making notes. And that led to Linking Your Thinking, which is a way to make sense of all the information that we have by making notes and linking ideas together.
There's so much good stuff in there. My fear is that I have no idea how to do any of this justice in an hour. I'm certainly going to do my best. Maybe we'll run a few minutes over. And those that are listening, hopefully I will have done my job well enough that they will enjoy the fact that maybe we'll go a few minutes over. But there's so many good things to talk about in here. The part that I want to talk about first is the very small portion of that where I actually got to work with you directly on a week-to-week basis. Anybody that works in the industry to hear that you went from, I'm an assistant editor and I want to get in the editor's chair, and you did it in a year. It does not matter if people here have worked in editing or worked in costume design or worked in music or whatever it is, to go from an assistant role to one of the lead roles in whatever that proverbial chair is just doesn't happen. And to watch you do this so quickly and rapidly was astounding to me. And maybe I get 1% of the credit at best. I know that we are working together week to week. But something tells me that in your process of learning and consuming information and taking action on it and organizing it, my guess is that that served you not only in the transition from assistant editing to editing, but also from football to civil engineering, from civil engineering to entrepreneurship. My guess is one of the connective threads between all these transitions is your ability to synthesize and organize information.
I think you nailed it. I'd put it this way. I feel like it's the missing step. My favorite time was when I was a post-production coordinator on a Netflix show. And because they were behind shooting the first two episodes, I had all the time in the world to sit in with the assistant editor and the editors and just see what they were up to. So I would sit, I would ask. So I was very, you know, forward. Do you mind? Am I interrupting? And I would take notes, physical notes, sometimes on my phone, but that wasn't enough. Then like after hours or because it was slow during work, I'd go back to my own computer and I would just start synthesizing and I would type it all out and I'd say, oh, this connects to what Walter Murch said in a blink of an eye. And I would literally make a connection to Walter's notes. And now I have this new context and I would continually do that. This is like a way to make better sense of the world and rapidly improve how quickly we understand something. So this really accelerated my journey with editing. I mean, like from confidence angle, from a capability angle, all of those things. So I was putting myself in a position that when opportunities came, I'd be ready for them.
I always appreciate people that will create their own quote unquote luck, right? It's where hard work meets opportunity and you are doing your best to synthesize all that information. You could have said, oh, production's behind. I'm just going to chill out. as opposed to here's an opportunity. Here's me really using this time to my fullest, using the downtime that the editors have, that even the assistant editors have, to just really learning workflows, learning the creative process. And yeah. Not that I would wish, go ahead.
Yeah, just one point on that. And I don't want to make it sound like, I had to work so hard and grind, because it wasn't that. It was actually, I had made it really fun. It was like a fun game. It was all a game, just to be like, okay, you know, what did Skip McDonald say? And how does that relate to what Walter Murch said? And how's that relate to what Johnny Converse said? And, you know, all these editors that I was learning from. And then it's like, okay, and what do I think about that? So that was just a fun game. It wasn't a chore that I had to do. It was, I really want to know. I want to learn. Learning is fun and I get to do it. I'm getting paid right now to, you know, learn something. Let's keep going. So it wasn't, It was reclaiming what's been hijacked from us, which is our agency, to not just consume and collect more, but to actually have fun engaging with these ideas that we love. So I just want to say, like, it was a fun thing to do all the time. It was never like, oh, I'm grinding here. It was, we just have to kind of reframe that so it becomes fun.
Yeah, and I'm so glad that you brought that up, because I want to get to a second to your transition and making the decision that I want to either put my career in Hollywood on hold or frankly abandon it so I can pursue this new direction. But before we get there, what I see here is a seed that's now been planted and you feel like you're being pulled to something. It's not, oh, I got to take notes, or, you know, there's, it looks like things are going to be slow. I got to find some way to, you know, generate income elsewhere. It was just, this was something that you enjoyed doing. You were pulled to doing it. You were having fun doing it. But then you started to see the utility in this skill. So even before you were linking your thinking, you were linking your thinking, right? You literally had become that as a brand, but that's when you were starting to put all the pieces together. So I want to zoom a little bit forwards to when you had to make what, at least the last time that we talked, was probably one of the most difficult career decisions, which is, I've made it. I'm here. And I'm not sure I actually want the job. So I want to talk about that moment. Then I want to break down how you were able to make that decision, because even though the circumstances could not be more different in our industry, I think understanding how you came to that decision to know, I want to lean into becoming a creator, creating content, building a platform. I want to go to kind of what that that deciding moment was. And I want to really break that down for people.
Okay. I'll do a brief version so then you can like target in where you'd like. Mm-hmm. So I don't ramble on with like every micro step. But I think really what it was is Joey Reinisch, who's also an editor on Better Call Saul. He was going to edit a few episodes, and for a while he was Skip McDonald's editor on Breaking Bad and Better Call Saul and all these shows. And so Joey was elevated. He was going to edit 601 and 603 of Better Call Saul for, you know, episodes for season 6. And he needed an assistant. And because I had worked with them both and done a lot with them, they were familiar with me. And I was like, yes. And I was so positive through text or through the phone call, whatever it was. And then I got off the phone. I thought, why am I hesitating? Like, all my dreams are coming true. Joey's awesome. Skip's awesome. Everyone on the Breaking Bad team and Better Call Saul universe, they're all awesome. Why am I hesitating? And it was because for the past year and a half, this pandemic had happened, and this other thing that I was naturally enthusiastic about, notes, was having a moment online. And I shared some stuff to a nerdy group that I was a part of, and they said, tell me more. And then I started to share more, and then they were asking, but what about this? And what about, you know, how do you take notes this way? How do you not lose your notes? How do you find them and make sense of them? And I was giving answers, and then it just kind of became this feedback loop. So when I got that call, I was like, yeah, I'll totally get back to you. I just want to run it, you know, past my partner and all this, but really I was also running it past myself. I knew I couldn't say no, but I was just like checking in with this strange hesitation. And that just let me know that I'm totally doing the show, but after this one, I might be done. And that's exactly what happened. I had the greatest experience. I mean, it was really the pinnacle of my short-lived career, but I knew this other world was for me. I can go into some of those reasons, but I knew like this is going to be my encore.
Yes. So along the lines of those nerds that are saying, tell me more, I definitely want you to tell all of us more, because I think that the details here are going to be so important, where, again, you're really being pulled to something. You had this amazing career opportunity and there was this hesitation and you were really listening to that intuition. And it said, I don't know, like it might actually, this career changing opportunity might take me away from this thing that I'm building inside that's mine. So let's get into the details a little bit where you said, yeah, I posted this thing for some people. Like those are really, really important details for the sake of this conversation in making the transition from creative to creator. So let's get into the details here.
Yeah. So when the pandemic happened, I had a very forward-thinking boss who's awesome, my favorite boss, Gina Scheer. And before she even got approval from Sony, she's like, put all the data on hard drive so we can work from home when they lock us down. And that's what happened. So then I was able to actually work right here in this spot. And I was working on a show that ended up being called Coyote, and had Michael Chiklis as the star. And we were locked down, which meant that when I didn't have work to do, I kind of had a little bit more flexibility because it's remote. Something else happened at exactly that time is this developer couple, just two people, they came out with an application called Obsidian. And it was the first time that we had an easy way to take a note, like a basic plain text note, a file on your computer, and just immediately link it to another note. And so for anyone who's an idea person, which I know if you're listening to this, you're an idea person just by default, this is like amazing, a kid in a candy store times 10. So any ideas I have or thoughts or just whatever, I can now connect it to other ideas. And it was just this explosion, a Cambrian explosion of creativity. So in those early years, they had a Discord, and they still do, a Discord forum. So basically an online place for discussions to happen. And I was very active in there, because I was helping with the development of the app itself. The developers were looking for feedback for all of us. It's like, I don't like this. Oh, you know, this other application has this. Can you try to add that? And this amazing energy developed. Everyone was locked into one place because of the pandemic. So there are a lot of people, a lot of eyeballs, and we're all trying to figure out how to do these things. There was kind of a, and I think this is an important point, there were some predominant ways, practices that were considered the best way to do something. One is to have like many, many small atomic notes. And that's the only way, is a kind of very dogmatic. You must have these small atomic notes. This is how you do linked notes. And I had resistance to that. And I shared that resistance. I shared a counter opinion. And that was, it's great to have the small notes, but we can get lost in a forest of our notes that way, and it can feel overwhelming and chaotic. I propose that we have a map of the content below that can give us a bird's eye view to all these notes. And when I did that for myself, what I found was in this new tool, it was so fast that I could actually use this bird's eye view as the place to do my best thinking. So it's basically like I was scattering around all these amazing ideas in a single place. And that's when I recognized I was onto something, and I wanted to just shout from the rooftops and be like, everybody, this is amazing. So I started to just share those ideas. So I was like, try this thing. I'm calling it currently a map of content. And here's why I think it doesn't just organize, but actually supercharges our thinking. And then other people are like, you're dumb. It's just an index note. And other people are like, whoa, I see what you're doing and it's working. So, you know, there's resistance to, you know, someone opening their mouth and sharing a counter opinion, but there are also people that supported it and said, it's working for me. So
you're always going to have haters, and you know that you must be doing something right if there's going to be a lot of people that are pushing back. What I find really interesting and valuable about this is that you didn't say, you know what, I need to generate some supplemental income, so I'm going to put together a thing and I'm going to start asking people for money. Instead, you saw a problem. You said, people are struggling with this. I think I can be valuable and I can bring them a solution. And you just started helping them, and you were just providing them value. That to me is often where this starts. And this is so eerily familiar with, and I don't think you and I were connected at the time, so maybe you were aware of it, but your experience with Obsidian is very similar to my experience with Trello, where I discovered Trello, I think 2013, maybe 2014, before anybody knew what it was. And I was starting to use it to build all of my workflows. Mm-hmm. And I would have people looking over my shoulder saying, what's this? How does that work? And it wasn't quite, you know, the kind of the digital world that we have now, because this is way before the pandemic. And this was more people seeing it in physical offices. But there was no training for Trello at all. And I thought, oh, well, maybe I can teach some Trello training. And then by, you know, by de facto became the Trello guy on LinkedIn Learning. And it was just me saying, I love Trello. And like you, to this day, I still get comments where people say, I've never seen anybody have so much fun teaching a piece of software. But like, I turn it into like stand-up learning, like making jokes about Trello and here's how to use this and that. And what was interesting about that is, yes, it helped me generate some supplemental income, but that's where the seed was planted, where I found my voice. And again, going back to these Venn diagrams, it was, here's something that's really complex, that's hard to learn. I'm really good at simplifying things. Here's a really useful digital tool that people are not integrating into their workflows. And specifically at the time, it was post-production workflows. You take those two things together. Yeah, you would teach Trello, but then you take my very unique voice and learning style, which is, I make it really goofy and entertaining and stupid. Now, all of a sudden, I think, there might be something here. Maybe I need to find a way to simplify other ideas and other learning systems and also bring some sense of it being entertaining and engaging. And it took a few years for those Venn diagrams to really intersect. But that's where I started to realize, I think there might be a future for me, not just as a Hollywood creative telling stories, but as a content creator, which, by the way, was not a term that anybody used back then. And even though I've been, quote unquote, a content creator for 10 years, it's probably only this year that I finally realized, I think I'm a content creator. But I'm curious if you had a similar experience where it wasn't just, ooh, here's a place to monetize this and make a buck. But it seems like you really found yourself in this community.
100%. A couple points. So remind me of the identity piece if I forget to circle back to it. But yes, to your point, and in both of our examples, it wasn't a top-down, being strategic sort of thing. It was like, I have this actual problem. Like, I personally deal with information overwhelm. How am I going to solve for this, like, for myself? And then just naturally, you know, you watch a good show, you want to talk to other people about it. Well, it's the same thing. I'm like, I'm doing something and I want to talk to other people about it. For some of us, we might think, everyone knows this thing because I know it so well. And that's one of those major fallacies, especially for someone that's listening to this. You have dedicated experience that is valuable. You might just not know it, but when you start talking out loud, you'll get a few people. It's like a siren call. Your tribe will start to find you, or, you know, you'll get some sort of feedback. And then from there, you can kind of move around and kind of figure out what that special thing is that you provide, because it's not always obvious. I recognized a lot of what I do. Yes, I help people organize their ideas, but it's also giving people permission that they can spend time lost in ideas, lost in thought, without feeling like, oh, you know, the toxic productivity police are going to tell me I need to like get the next 10 tasks done. And I'm trying to be a voice that says, actually, it's okay to have this space away from everything that's online all the time. So yeah, I think it starts with joy. And then circling to the identity, Zach, and this was funny, you just said that you're coming to terms with being a content creator, kind of.
Well, just this year, this is my year of like, okay, I guess I'm a content creator. I've done it for 10 years. I'm just now starting to accept the identity.
So that's twice as extreme as me, because last year in Anaheim, they have this VidCon. Like, it's a YouTube conference. Mm-hmm. And so I finally went. Now, my first YouTube video was 2020. It was on Obsidian. It's still my best. And just, it's got 2 million views. Going to that conference, 4 years into being on YouTube, I came back and finally wrote a newsletter. And the title was, I'm a YouTuber, I'm a YouTuber, I'm a YouTuber. It was my attempt to finally own this identity that I was feeling so resistant to. I'm not like fully there. That's what I'm telling myself. But it's really funny, these identities that take so long to shed off. And that can hold us back from a lot of opportunities. Oh, you know, being a creator, content creation, all these kind of negative connotations, if you're coming from the Hollywood world, that's only getting you in trouble. That's only getting you like jaded or frustrated. There's no value in that. So it's like, how can we observe ourselves authentically and kind of get on with it. Like, okay, this is reality. This is the world. It doesn't care what you think. We need to now be able to adjust to how the world's adjusting and evolving.
Well, now you've really piqued my curiosity, because never in a million years would I have thought that you of all people would still be struggling to accept the identity of content creator. Because since you started this just posting some stuff for some people phase, you built a very successful YouTube channel. You're literally the guy. If somebody says anywhere in the world, I want to learn Obsidian, you're literally the guy. And I'm one of those people that said, I'm going to look for a better way to take my notes. That's how I refound you. I, of course, knew of you as a student in my program, but then you kind of disappeared off into the ether, which is fine because I have a lot of students that do that and come back years later. And I was doing a random search, like Learn Obsidian or whatever it was. And all of a sudden, boom, you're showing up over and over. And I'm like,
that's hilarious.
That's Nick. Like, what? And now because of you, and when I say because of you, I don't say this lightly, because of you, my entire life and my entire brain is now an Obsidian. Now, I will say with the caveat, Obsidian is like driving a Ferrari when it comes to linking your thinking, generating ideas, and brainstorming. I'm still driving the Ferrari around the driveway. I'm not sure I've taken it out onto the street yet. But the point being that you literally became the guy. So you're the guy on YouTube for learning Obsidian. You have, you've done multiple live cohorts, teaching classes. And also now we look at the fact, and this is going to be, I know, relatively new news for you to share, but you now have a publishing deal for a book to talk about linking your thinking. Why in the world are you still struggling to accept the identity of being a content creator?
Yeah, it's tough. I think it's because when I look online and I see, the YouTube shorts or just the certain type of YouTube that's for a younger audience, I'm like, that's not me. And so I get in my own way because I'm like, that's not me. That's dumb. The stupid thumbnails and this and that. But again, that doesn't help me. Those are things I need to get over because it's only getting in my way. You're right. So I think YouTuber, I'm trying to own content creator. I think one that's a little bit easier is just educator. Like just, hey, I have my own experiences. Like, and that takes me back to Dr. Seuss. Like, you are you. That is truer than true. There's no one alive that is youer than you. So you have experience that no one else has. And I tell myself this half the time. So it's like, that's what needs to be shared. No one else can share your unique experience and your unique voice, just no matter what.
I'm so glad that you shared that. And once again, I didn't know this at all. That's exactly the way that I feel. I will own educator until the end of time. When somebody asks, well, especially if you're at a family gathering or some kind of a non-network event, oh, like, what do you do? It used to be, well, I've worked in Hollywood for years and I've edited television and movies, but now it's complicated. But now I just say, I run an online education business. Boom, done. Like, that's who I am and that's what I do. I happen to have all these other experiences. Yes, I create content as a podcaster. Used to have YouTube, gave up on YouTube because it wasn't working for me. Now I have a Substack. But at the end of the day, those to me are just all avenues to allow me to be an educator and connect with my students and be able to help them. But I very much struggle with the idea of content creator. And it's funny because it's for a lot of the reasons that you brought up. And if you think you feel old looking at the stuff on YouTube, imagine how I feel, right? Like, what you're never going to see for me is make sure to like and smash that subscribe button. That's not me. Like, every three frames, adding Metal Gear sound effects and graphics, like, watching a lot of the videos that are super popular now, to me, it feels like throwing razor blades into a blender.
Oh my goodness.
I sit and I watch this stuff with my kids. I'm like, I just can't. And I think a lot of people that are my generation or maybe around your generation or a little bit older, when we look at the YouTube space, we say, I can't. Like, I just, not only can I not be this kind of person, I don't even want to cut this kind of stuff or shoot this kind of stuff or produce it. To me, that's where I see the value in the overlap. This is something that I've talked about in several of the other summit conversations. So for anybody that just happens to be catching this one, there's a whole lot more of this conversation elsewhere. But the short version of it, for those that have already heard me talk about this a few times, is I think there's tremendous value in this intersection. Because in Hollywood, we have the best storytellers in the world, bar none. The best writers, the best cinematographers, the best editors, composers, costume designers, you name it, all the crafts. We understand through our various crafts how to tell great stories. We suck as entrepreneurs. We do not know how to sell ourselves. We do not know how to package information. We solve so many problems and we don't even have the ability or the awareness to look at the problems we solve and say, hey, this might be valuable to others. And I would also argue that as creatives, and this is something you can act, you can find in the literature and in the research, which is one of the reasons that I wanted to include as a bonus supplement to the summit, one of my recent interviews with Dr. Scott Barry Kaufman, who's literally one of the world's best psychologists and researchers that understands creativity. With high levels of creativity comes very high levels of very messy, unorganized minds, high levels of being sensitive, and with that sensitivity, high levels of imposter syndrome. So on the creative side, we have the best storytellers in the world that are too afraid to put themselves out there and monetize their value. On the creator side, amazing entrepreneurs, amazing business people, they know how to game the algorithms. They know how to capture people's attention. By and large, I can confidently say they suck at storytelling. Most of the stuff that's out there, it's just not stories. And one of the things that I fear, and I think I talked about this in another one of my summit interviews, but in watching my son grow up, being a Hollywood cinephile, showing him all the great movies of my childhood and even before, right? So we've watched Back to the Future, Raiders of the Lost Ark, and Bloodsport, and Terminator, all these great movies, right? My fear is that when my son has kids, he's going to show them Back to the Future and Raiders of the Lost Ark and Terminator and Bloodsport, because he's not going to show them Mr. Beast videos. It's like, oh, let me show you this video I watched when I was 12 of a bunch of people putting their hand on a car because they wanted to see who would win the car. Like, it's just all very disposable content. So my fear is that there's this gap. And if we have the YouTube creator economy that is just destroying Hollywood in every sense of the word, as far as numbers, as far as consumption, as far as revenue, like YouTube is eating Netflix's and Hollywood's lunch, but they've yet to crack the code on telling great timeless stories. That's where I think the convergence of these two areas is so important. And that's where I think you could potentially be beneficial in helping all of us link our thinking. So I'm curious, what are your thoughts about this convergence of storytellers in the creative space and all of the entrepreneurs in the creator space?
Absolutely. Well, that is interesting because, man, that can go in so many directions. We definitely have skill sets that work well. I think YouTube is probably the best one to look at when we're thinking about like a social media platform, because it's no longer really that. It's an entertainment platform. It's a media platform. And yes, it is just outpacing everything. And it's, I'm happy it is. I'm so happy it's YouTube, as opposed to like Twitter X or, you know, something else, Facebook. YouTube's fantastic. And yes, the storytelling is going to be even more important because they just introduced a series. I think that's the term for it. So they just had their huge conference, and now we're going to have something that looks like a, you know, Netflix type of series. So instead of having all these one-off videos, you'll be able to actually tell cohesive stories with, you know, some arcs and everything. Here's something else that's really important. Connected TVs are the fastest growing platform on YouTube. So that's even, so no matter how we think about content, just think of YouTube as they are Netflix, they are Apple, they are already these companies, and it's just looking for the right, that's where people, more and more people are consuming content, whether it's on a laptop, a device, a mobile phone, or on a big TV. If it is on a big TV, guess what comes back? The desire for those stories. That's very natural to sit down wherever that is on a TV and watch a story-driven content. So there'll be so many nice and fun creative opportunities to not so much worry about just getting one viral video, but you can think of it creatively about how to string videos together, all sorts of things to express what your unique experience and skill sets might be. The opportunities are endless, and it's scary too, but as you dive in, and there'll always be more you don't know, but the water is warm. And YouTube wants you to succeed. They provide many, many tools. And the algorithm, what is algorithm? Algorithm is people, more or less. So YouTube wants people to stay on platform. So if you're staying on platform, that means you're watching. So if you have a video, they're not looking at your channel to decide, oh, are we going to recommend the channel? They're looking at a very specific video with a title and a thumbnail and a generalized concept that someone can grok at a glance and say, should I click on this? And if you say 1950s costume designer, ultimate guide, you are going to be in a category of one, and you'll get that attention. those people will find you. It doesn't matter if they're 18, if they're 12, or if they're 58 or 88. And so that's incredibly empowering. It's just, I think, baby steps to get there one step at a time, but YouTube wants you to win.
Yeah, I love the way that you put all of that. I hadn't even thought about this idea of you can really niche yourself down, like this idea of 1950s costume designer. That's exactly what I'm going for with this idea of this overlap where we can bring the value that we have to this world. I wasn't even aware of the series feature in YouTube, but to me, that's a complete and total game changer. But it doesn't surprise me at all because we always come back to story. Not in Hollywood. I mean, as humans, we always come back to story. That's the way that we are wired. We make sense of our realities, not our reality, but all of us have our own versions of our own realities. We make sense of it in the shared collective experience of being human through storytelling. And we're not going to make sense of it by locking somebody in an underground tomb for 48 hours to see how long they can survive. That's just for, you know, shock value. But once we really explain the human condition, either through nonfiction or fiction storytelling, that's where we feel things. So I had no idea, but it doesn't surprise me that there's this new series feature, which tells me that all of those that are doing really, really, really well on YouTube, they're going to look at that and say, there's the next opportunity. We have no idea how to tell a good story. Anybody out there available that can help us do that? Like, that to me is the exact spot that we need to focus our attention. And this is going to sound like repetition for everybody that's been very diligently listening to all of the interviews. This is not a bug that I'm being repetitive. This is a feature. I've talked over and over on my newsletter with my students, and I've also mentioned in this summit several times that I believe we're going back to the four network system. This is not coming from a place of I have insider executive knowledge. I don't see all the spreadsheets. To me, it's just common sense that when this worked the best was in the broadcast days where we had four networks. And for those that are younger, they don't even remember those days, but you probably are old enough to remember. You had ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox. That's what you had. You had four channels. And if you were really lucky, you had cable. But when you do that, you know where the eyeballs are. And I really believe we're going to go back to that. But instead of those four networks, it's going to be Apple and Netflix and Amazon and YouTube. Those are going to be our four networks. And we're always going to want to know where are the best stories. And I'm really glad, by the way, that you pointed out that YouTube isn't really social media, because how depressing and demoralizing would it be if now the number one content consumption platform was either Facebook or Instagram or TikTok? Like that, I would just be like, I'm done. I can't.
Yeah, but I feel that.
But for me, the thing that I realized where it really was game over as far as, well, maybe this is a blip, maybe it'll go back to the old world. It was one statistic, and it was the statistic that more people watch YouTube on their TVs than their phones. And when I saw that, I said, it's over. Like the Hollywood that we know, the legacy world of Hollywood is gone. Now that more people watch YouTube on their TV than their phones, says it's a mainstay. And guess what? I also watch YouTube. I never watch it on my phone. I never watch it on my computer unless I'm researching something. Mm-hmm. Now I watch it on my TV, just like it's any other network. And I'm old. I'm like 100 years old, and even I'm doing it.
Yes. May I share a few? So I just talked
with a
YouTube former employee who worked at YouTube for 9 years, and she was giving a presentation to a small group. A few things is, yes, YouTube is the largest media company in the world. 1 billion hours are consumed daily. And for everyone here talking about storytelling, they're providing features. Some of them are AI, and we don't have to go, oh, that's, you know, we can never use AI. We can explore it with our values intact, because they have VO2, which are 6 seconds that you can add to. If you're in the US, you can add 6 seconds to any sort of YouTube short video right now. Why not experiment? Keep it private, but just like play around with these features. They're introducing flow, which is going to be a huge one for both Hollywood and for the individual. And so it's a way to incorporate AI and visual effects. It's going to be an AI filmmaking tool. Do I want to watch a film made by AI? Hell no. But if I have my own creative idea and I'm thinking about it, but I can't hire a whole VFX team, I mean, wouldn't it be nice to just have something that can show that? So whether you like it or not, there are changes coming. And if we can bring our values to it and have an open mind and maintain like our center, these are all really fun and creative ways that we can get our ideas across. And I think that's what's really exciting to me.
Yeah, I'm very glad that you brought that up. And it's so both coincidental and ironic that you're literally reading it from your notes and once again, linking your thinking, which we'll get back to. Yeah. But I have many, many scars in my back from all of the flaming arrows that have been flung at me because I've talked about artificial intelligence for the last few years, really until really since ChatGPT kind of became a thing. I've had a lot of people that have been asking me my thoughts on AI. And even in the very, very early stages, I was coming at it from a place of maybe this is something to explore and something to think about and embrace in certain respects, of which I've gotten a lot of hate. So I'm not going to go deep into all of the politics of it, but for anybody that is unaware of my stance, I do not believe that AI should unethically be scraping past films, past artwork, past ideas, and allow us to regurgitate them by stealing other people's ideas. I don't believe in that at all. Mm-hmm. And I also believe that by and large, we need to find a way to protect it from, and this is a much deeper conversation that I got into with another one of my guests, Brian Merchant, where people will say, well, you're going to be replaced by AI. Not really. Management is replacing you by AI. The AI is not displacing you. And where I really see the opportunity is in the things that it allows us to do as individuals that we couldn't do otherwise. It's not a matter of, well, if I decided that I wanted to make a 2-minute short about giraffes in outer space, well, I'm displacing a crew that I would have paid for otherwise. Like, I'm never going to have the means to be able to make a 2-minute short about giraffes in outer space. This gives me the ability to generate new creative ideas and experiment with them. That's where I think there's really an opportunity. I know that for me, full disclosure, I use ChatGPT on a daily basis, but I never will hit the export button or copy paste and say, here's my newsletter today, courtesy of ChatGPT. For me, it's more about helping me synthesize ideas, brainstorm ideas. I really use it as a research tool where rather than spending hours and hours and hours, you can give it a one paragraph prompt. Boom, your research assistant comes back in 30 seconds. Here are these details. Here's this article. Here's this, here's that, or the other thing. So again, it's allowing me to link my thinking. And I also now, and I'm going to talk to you about this offline afterwards, I want to know how to get much better at getting Obsidian to talk to ChatGPT because it's kind of messy and it's a bunch of digital duct tape. And I'm sure you have ideas.
Oh my goodness. I can talk about something crazy that just happened.
I would love to hear more about that in a second. But okay. I want to frame the next part of our conversation here. And this is something that you and I talked a little bit more about offline. Mm. My biggest fear individually with AI, not the Skynet is becoming self-aware type conversation, not everybody in the industry or all industries are going to get replaced by technology. Those are real fears, but those are separate conversations. My biggest fear as an individual is when I think about the use of smartphones, I don't remember phone numbers anymore. I need Google Maps to get around Los Angeles. I'm like, crap, I've been to the dog groomers 5 times. Why do I not remember how to get to the dog groomers? Boop, boop, boop. Put it in Google Maps. Oh yeah, that's where it is. My greatest fear is that ChatGPT and other AI platforms, especially for writers, thinkers, and knowledge workers, we're going to lose that critical thinking ability. And I know this is something that you have a lot to say about. So even though this isn't technically AI day of the summit, I can't not have this conversation with you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's fascinating when you think about it because there's the famous story, I forget the guy's name now, ancient Greek dude. And the story goes that there was a party, a wedding or something. And then he went out to get some fresh air and then the building collapsed under an earthquake. And he remembered where everyone was and could identify the bodies just by his memory. So this idea that we can remember those things, Cicero's known famously for memorizing like 2 to 3 hour speeches, which is just fascinating. And they were worried about the written word. And sure enough, we can't memorize 2 to 3 hour speeches. I mean, maybe a handful, 0.000, you know, you get the idea. Almost no one percentage-wise can memorize that type of speech. It's inherently within us. We could pull it off, but we won't. We don't have to, and it wouldn't make sense for us to. For what purpose? It would be maybe fun if that's what you're into. So now we're in an age where the ways that we had to remember something is changing on us again. I really feel your example of Google Maps and all that. I love to turn off Google Maps when I'm on the home stretch. Every single time I feel like Luke in A New Hope. He's like, Luke, your system's down. Are you all right? And he's like, yeah, I'm all right. And it's because Obi-Wan told him to use the Force. And I feel like so proud of myself. I'm like, I'm just navigating by looking at the street signs and finding my way again. And it feels good. It just, it feels like you're at one with this world, even though you're in a space bubble called a vehicle. But now we're going through a different phase. So we will remember things differently. And there are pros and cons to that. One is that the pace of information and how quickly that we can just kind of have it come in and out will continue to unsettle the majority of the population, meaning that they will lose a sense of agency, meaning they'll just consume more. And that saddens me. I think there are ways that we can reclaim agency. An obvious one is just step away from the device, go for a walk. We can get into a mindfulness meditation practice. I have spent the last 5 years working on a very practical one that doesn't turn away from the screen, but figures out a way that when you look at the screen, you can still feel fully in charge of your thoughts. And that's when I say, how do we go from like the consuming to the creating, the collecting to the connecting? Well, what if we had a space that no one ever taught us how to make in the digital world? Because in the physical world, we do have a space for us. We call it home. We don't have a home in the digital world, and the mind needs a home. So on these platforms like Obsidian, I call it the Ideaverse. But at the end of the day, we need to give ourselves our own home for our mind. This is a place that's basically turned off from all the outside world and gives us something that nothing else can, that's moving so quickly. And that's a sense of calm, grounding, foundation, a sense of security. If you think about Maslow's hierarchy, we don't even have the bottom need met mentally throughout most of the day. So if we can give us that, if we can give ourselves a place where that need is met, it's amazing how better we can feel, how much more calm and under control. So I think, that was a wide ranging sort of answer because it's a wide ranging issue, but this gives us a way to hold on to and have a web of cognitive scaffolding to continue to make sense of a crazy world that we can just always come back to whenever the world's too crazy. And it will only get crazier with the speed of AI and just the lack of the web. Anyways, that goes down a lot of different roads, but technically it's wonderful to have this space that you own that's yours. Yeah.
I want to go a little bit deeper into this idea of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. I think this is so key because you had mentioned that we don't have this digital space that's kind of meeting our basic need of food, water, and shelter, right? The kind of security. And I would argue that even though it might not be completely literal, where I think so many people are emotionally right now is the fear that they're even going to lose that. If we were talking 2, 3, 5 years ago when you and I first met, the mere thought of somebody that's working at your level in the industry, at my level in the industry, having to go work for Trader Joe's or deliver DoorDash to pay the bills would sound absurd, absolutely absurd. You'd say, what post-apocalyptic universe are we living in? But even though I would argue that anybody that's watching this that has an internet connection, that has a laptop, they're probably not physically homeless. Frankly, they might be. But we feel like there's so much uncertainty and we've spent our entire careers learning of very few, but very highly specialized crafts and skills. And now, yoink, all that's been taken away from us and we've lost those basic needs. And the reason that I wanted to bring you on, other than all of the reasons that we've already talked about, is your ability to help people see patterns where there aren't patterns, where they can see. Then the reason that I wanted to talk about your journey, it wasn't, I need to diversify my income streams and I need to find a different way to make income. It was, there's a problem in front of me. Huh. I can't find the solution. I guess I'll have to find the solution. And you talk to any great successful entrepreneurs, they almost all have the same origin story. There was this thing that was just bugging me and I couldn't find a solution for it. So I figured I would just putz around and I'd find the solution myself and then boom. And I think the problem that you're helping us solve is going to be one of the most universal human, a very important universal problem that I think we don't even necessarily see coming yet, which is there's so much information. And before AI, I would say most of us felt absolutely overwhelmed with all this information. And I made the joke before, and I think I even made it in our previous podcast. But I was saying a decade ago that there's going to be a psychological condition known as Netflix queue anxiety. Mm-hmm. Whether it's email inboxes, it's all the red dots and Facebook Messenger versus Instagram versus TikTok versus email versus, well, now I've got 7 streaming platforms. We're never going to consume all the information. It's never going to happen. but I think our ability to know how to synthesize it, and most importantly, figure out where can we be valuable and where can we provide solutions? What are the things that people come to us for to solve? That to me is the way out of this giant mess. It's not, oh, I got to figure out a bunch of ways to make money. It's where are the problems that others are experiencing in the world that I'm solving for myself, and how do I deliver that knowledge to other people? And I feel like that's where you are in the exact right place at the right time with the right solution to the right problem, which is information overload in all of this scatterbrained information and ideas that we have as creatives. So let's get a little bit more into the weeds. This is literally going to be the shameless self-promotion portion of the program, where you talk about, here's what linking your thinking is, here's how it works. And I'm also curious as to what you're experimenting with in the world of AI as well.
Yeah, totally. Right before going into that, I just wanted to hit on one point that we've both said, and I just want to like kind of double click on
for
a moment, which is like, even if it feels so intimidating to, you know, go from creative to creator, what you can do instead, and probably kind of somewhere in the middle, is, you know, go to community, like find the communities of the things that you're interested in, whether it's gardening or whatever, because it's that sort of, it's a term I have, wandertivity.
It's based off wandertivity. That's a good one.
Wandertivity is based on Tolkien's famous quote, "Not all those who wander are lost." And that's one of my top quotes of all time, because through that, that's what I've recognized in all these pursuits, is that they weren't like meaningless hobbies or interests. They were fueling the next thing. And they were giving me then a unique perspective for whatever field I went into. You know, so if I was hired somewhere, I wasn't just somebody out of college who had a film degree. I was like, I was here, I was there. And that's so much more compelling and gives you a suite of ways to solve a problem. And that's invaluable. So I really encourage you to explore. I encourage everyone to not have shame or feel like it's incorrect to explore their interests and find their communities online, and then learn from those individuals and be like, what are you doing? What's working? Let's hang out. Whatever it looks like, that's going to really open up all sorts of doors, because with community is just natural energy. You can feed off of each other. If you're just alone in your room, it gets lonely fast. So I just kind of want to really hit on that point.
I'm really glad that you hit on that as well. And for those that have not been following along to every single interview, I actually have one of the world's experts on reaching out, networking, and building relationships and building communities. Mm. So anybody that wants to go to that interview with Selena Su, that'll be in day 3, but we talk all about how to build rich relationships. And I, you know, consider myself a bit of a networking and relationship building expert myself. Kind of going back to, and I want to get definitely get back to linking your thinking and the services you provide, but just to triple click, because as you said, we're going to double click on it, to triple click on this idea of building community and how we can be useful to people and solve problems. Never in a million years that I think I was going to build an academy for creatives, and one of my specializations was going to be teaching introverts how to write cold outreach and build relationships. Never in a million years did I see that coming. But I've now become, at least in our industry, kind of the de facto person to go to when you say, how do I reach out cold? How do I provide value to somebody? How do I surround myself with peers, with mentors, right? And what I found is that everybody kept coming to me with the same questions. All my students would come to me with the same questions. We were supposed to have a class that was about productivity. Today's the week that we're going to talk about how to use Trello for XYZ. And my students in these small groups would all say the same thing. Well, now that I kind of know what my goals are, I feel like I need to start connecting with the right people. Can you help me write an outreach message? And my response was, what? You want me to teach you how to write an email? I guess. But then it just kept happening. And that's where my intuition said, maybe there's something here. Maybe, like you had said, you were just doing this thing with notes, and you figured everybody was doing this thing with notes, but you had a very highly specialized skill and a unique perspective towards it. That was very much how I discovered my aptitude for helping highly creative, highly introverted people reach out and build genuine relationships via email outreach. Again, it was, here's a problem. I feel like I can solve it, but it's not just, here's a way to monetize my skills. Here's a way that I can genuinely be valuable to other people. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think linking your thinking and all the services and skills and frameworks that you provide is absolutely essential for people right now that have all these various random dots that are their skills, their experience, whether work experience or life experience, unique knowledge, passions, like creative people are fascinating people. And I've always said that you could throw me into a room of 1,000 creative people and I could randomly point at somebody and I could do a 90-minute podcast interview with them and it would be fascinating. Mm-hmm. Because all of us have all kinds of various interests and passions and nerdy things that we do behind the scenes. And I think there's tremendous potential in all of those in this new world that we're going into. So I want to make sure that I leave people today, not just with inspiration or seeing opportunity. I always like to leave people with something that they can take action on. Yeah. So help us start to use at least some of the basics ideas that you teach in linking your thinking. Mm-hmm. So we can just start to figure out how do we put the pieces together for ourselves and our interests and how we can potentially transition and find this overlap between being creatives and being creators.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that. I would say it starts with this. We hear so many of other people's thoughts, we can no longer hear our own. That's a problem, information overwhelm. So how do we go from this collecting habit to a connecting habit? I believe we can get there with one word, because. Whenever something sparks, you simply say, because. So a couple examples. The show Andor is interesting to me because. What you say initially is going to suck half the time, but if you externalize it, so you get it out of your head and you get it onto the page, now we get to iterate it and it's fun. And then we say, and Andor connects to Tony Gilroy, and you make a note on Tony Gilroy, let's say, and then you start to just kind of make this web of understanding, very like wandertivity and energy here. It's not for an outcome of like being a creator tomorrow. It's just, this thing's interesting to me. So much so, I would like to get it out of my head and onto the page to honor it, to give it a place that I can come back to and continue to think about. And so it's just starting with saying, because, and I really promote externalizing our thoughts. So you can do that anywhere. It's just that simple. And so that would be what I call the spark method. When you feel a spark, make a remark. Now, to take it further, the last part of the spark method is to relate. So spark, remark, relate. And that's where we say, what does this relate to? What does this remind me of? I was watching the Tom Cruise movie and I was playing around with this exact prompt that I'm talking to you about, Zach. And I was like, Tom Cruise reminds me of, that time at the Cine 4 when my mom and brother were on like a soccer trip. And then my dad and brother, we went to watch Mission Impossible, the original movie at the Cine 4 for a dollar. I think it's like the dollar theater.
It's so depressing, but continue. Isn't it?
Yeah, I don't even, maybe that one was more, but there was a dollar theater.
Sure.
And I was like, this is amazing. So what I did is I made a note from Tom Cruise to the Cine 4, and that memory is a memory. And then I called my brother. I was like, do you remember this? And then he filled in more details. And this whole thing is just like this amazingly kind of like meaningful, cathartic sort of thing. Because my dad's no longer with us. So like those are the things that, you know, value doesn't just, how can I say this? When you do that, it's going to lead you in places you wouldn't expect. And you're increasing the surface area of luck, of insight, of whatever it is. And now this is a silly example kind of based on ideas and personal experiences, but that's just one. And if I'm doing that many, many times, I'm going to start to build up this really nice energy, this sense that I'm in control, that these ideas connect. And then next thing you know, I have a new project or effort called AI and the Inner Guide. And so how do we like stay ourselves, but still use AI? And so all these ideas start to influence that. And you have this kind of rich ecosystem of ideas in your back pocket, fueling you wherever you go. Yeah. Something like that.
I think that that's a great place to start. And I want to just reiterate, and this is kind of sort of what you're saying, but I want to add on top of it. One of the days that we have for this summit is all about this idea of a career transition in crisis. Everybody, I think most everybody, maybe there's 5% of people that feel great about their careers. They've got plenty of work coming in. It's fallen in their laps. The rest of us are always all wondering what the hell is going to happen next. And I don't think we're giving ourselves permission to wander. I've had so many students that I've talked to over the last 3 or 4 years that have been navigating career pivots, even before the massive downturn. And they feel like they have to have it figured out. I need to have the answer. I need to converge on this answer. And they're not giving their brains any space to diverge. There's no divergence of, I enjoyed gardening growing up, but I actually really enjoy rock climbing. And I really, wait a second. What if I taught this thing or did that thing or made a short story about this or wrote this or whatever it is? We just feel like we have to have it figured out. And when we don't have it figured out, the fear of not having it figured out leads to the anxiety of, well, I'm just going to scroll instead. I don't have my life figured out. So maybe all of the answers I seek are somewhere on this endless scrolling page, right? And we're not giving ourselves that space to both be bored, but I feel like so many people don't give themselves permission to not have it figured out. And that's what I love so much about your system is you're just giving yourself space. Like our physical nervous systems need that space because we're so hyper-connected to everything and everything is moving so much faster and there's so much more uncertainty. I would argue that one of the best things we can do is just disconnect and slow down and just allow our minds to wander. And I love that you literally now have a term for this. So this is great.
Yeah, well, thanks. I mean, that's, I think it's so important to your point. To quadruple click, on that. But yeah, no, I think just generally speaking,
we're just button mashing at this point.
Boom, boom, boom. I think we're just so tied into being an architect, architecting everything, thinking, how can I structure, how can I organize all this? And that's very important. That's half of how we think. But the other half is the gardener who allows for the chaos and the creativity. So if we can figure out how to have good gardener energy that's less chaos and more like creative within a space that we own, that's what I help people create, a system of linked notes called the Ideaverse, then all of a sudden the world opens up and someone says, you know what? I'm going to do a career transition, or I have the space to see I was looking at this the wrong way. And now I own myself more. Now I'm more confident in who I am. So, you know, it might be that sort of hokey stuff, but it's really kind of interesting how it comes out if one wants to give themselves space and has a mechanism to allow for that space to flourish. Yeah.
It's funny that you brought up the gardening versus the architect analogy, because that was what drew me into your new world in the first place. Again, I obviously knew you beforehand, but when I started to search for what tool do I want to use for my second brain? Right. I know he's now a friend of yours, but Tiago Forte has literally become the second brain guy. He's got a book on building a second brain, the Para Method. Like, he's now become the guy for personal knowledge management. And I started to go down that rabbit hole. And then I found one of your videos where you introduced the idea of being the gardener versus the architect. And as soon as I saw that, I'm like, huh, I've always been an architect. I've never allowed myself to be a gardener because to me, gardening is messy. Architecture is very systematic. It's very organized. It's very structured. So I say this with horrible pun not intended, but you planted a seed for me, which is there's a different way to do this. And the reason I bring it up, all you had to do was share an idea that planted a seed for me to go in a totally different direction and realize there's a problem I now need solved. You are the solution. And that's, again, where you come in with all of your diverse areas of interest, skills, knowledge, and otherwise, just sharing this one idea. What if you saw this as gardening versus architecture? That stuck with me. Years later, that still sticks with me. And I remind myself, dude, just gardening right now. You don't need to build the scaffolding. You don't have to have a perfect blueprint. Just allow yourself to plant some seeds and generate all these ideas and trust that with your systems, they will converge into something. And that comes from you planting that one seed in that one video that I found through one YouTube search years ago. So that's where I think that all of us can bring some form of value to this new world, regardless of what we think we can or can't do.
Yeah. Amazingly well said. And so it's a scary time, but it can be a hopeful time too. Yeah.
So I know that we've gone a little bit beyond time and I feel like I barely warmed up, but just for a couple of minutes, I want to go into the nerdy portion of this program where you're like, oh, if I told you the stuff I'm doing with AI, I realize we can't go deep into it, but what are some of the things that you're experimenting with? Not so much like the tech and the tools, but more like you said, I want to make sure that I can maintain my humanness, but really collaborate with AI without, again, going back to this idea of, I don't remember phone numbers. I can't navigate without a map. What are you doing to really use AI while still allowing yourself the ability to get better at critical thinking skills and synthesizing ideas?
Yes. So many different angles. So one, I'll start with the crazy thing I did is with a friend, Dan Shipper. He is the founder of this online suite of apps and tools called Every, It's really great if you want to stay on top of AI news. And anyways, I kind of told him what I was up to, and I was curious how to incorporate AI into something like Obsidian, someone's personal notes, in a way that felt wholesome. So I'm not talking about B2B. I'm not talking about you're going to be an amazing, you know, use this to rewrite and repurpose all your content, which is a different conversation. I'm going to sideline for now. But I just was like, how can this be used as for the inner guide archetype? There are a couple of archetypes that we use in a different framework. One's the inner guide, and kind of the opposite in the diagonal quadrant is the producer. Both are needed, but hey, just for the inner guide, like, how can I help know myself better? How can I do this with AI? So since he knows how to code and I don't, Claude had a new announcement recently with their new models. So he's like, download Claude Code. And so I had my laptop. He's like, okay, go to the command line. And I'm like, and then he's like, terminal. Okay, so it was open. And then we did the download. It took 5 minutes. It took 5 minutes for us to be able to point all like 11,000 of my notes from all these different years and ideas and everything, and have Claude look at that. And then here's the key though. What questions do you ask? And there's a real kind of art to this. And so the question was something along the lines of, you know, you are a clinical psychologist based on all of the notes that you see in here. What are three blind spots that I'm completely oblivious to in my life? And so this will be a video. We didn't know it was. I was just on a couch with him. But when I saw the first one, and my reaction was like, oh my goodness. That's what I was like, we have to film this. I'm not going to look at it anymore. The first one was, you're not entirely altruistic. The reason that you care to share so much is because you suffer abandonment trauma from being lost in the Mall of America when you were 5 years old. And I was like, whoa.
So, whoa, I just got goosebumps. That's nuts. And that's not even my story, but holy shit.
Yeah. And I was like, that is true. I was lost. I want to help other people get found too, just in a different way. Mm-hmm. And I was like, this is nuts. So that's just one very fast example of how you can use AI in a wholesome way. Now that made me realize something else. And I'm figuring out the frameworks, but very, very important at the kind of tail end of a process like this is a very important word that starts with I, integration. Whatever interaction, which would be the one before, whatever interaction you have with AI, you then need to integrate with another, like with humans again, like take it back to, so that's I think a really important point, meaning I wouldn't advise AI to be your only therapist, but if you're using that in concert with conversations with family and friends, or an actual therapist, then yes, you're integrating it. So that's one example. And there are many of those like that I think are really useful. And again, I mentioned earlier, algorithm, you might as well say people. Well, it's even more true when we say AI, you might as well say people. Like, it can do whatever. It's people. So like a little reframe, it's not just content creation and plagiarism of content. Like that's just one narrow use case. There are all these crazy use cases. Research, that's a great one. Great one. But there are other ones. Therapist, life coach, workout designer. Okay, you know, just all these things that it can help with to some capacity. So I think that's the long story short of some areas with some framework. So the one I'm playing with, the three eyes, the one at the front, and all these, I think, have to be you. They're all verbs. Imagine. So like, as you're about to interact with AI, imagine, like, what are you trying to do? Where are you trying to go? What are you trying to accomplish? Bring your imagination to it. Number two, interact. So now we're interacting with it, but you are interacting. You're not saying, just feed me something. And then three is the integration. Okay, whatever it spit out, what are you going to do about it? Integrate it with, you know, the rest of who you are, or by talking it through with other people. So again, this is fresh off the press because it's so brand new. That thing just happened this weekend where I had all that therapist analysis from AI, but then I was like, okay, this has potential. And it still has shortcomings. Like, so don't get mm-hmm. me wrong. There are still shortcomings. And I was like, it's wrong on that one. It's over-indexing a very specific note and thinking that then applies to who I am. And so what it says, and this is really important, doesn't mean it's true. Like, we have to bring ourselves to it. Yeah.
But your intuition knew that there was something true about it, which was one of the blind spots, which is why it's so interesting.
Another I word.
What's that? Which one?
Intuition.
Oh, intuition. Yeah, exactly. So yes, very much so. You need to be careful of hallucinations. Anytime that it shares any form of research, a quote, whatever it might be, I'm like, that's great. Let me actually double check and make sure this isn't bullshit. But intuition in your case is so important. So lastly, and again, this could be, I've realized I've opened Pandora's box and now I'm trying to shove it shut. but the last thing, very, very quickly, are there any rules or guidelines that you give yourself so that you're not outsourcing your critical thinking skills to AI and atrophying those skills?
Yes. Another word that I think is important along with intuition is discernment. So with whatever comes at you, that you're being discerning about what you see and bringing all of your own experience to it. When it comes to content, this is where I have some hesitations and some other ideas I'm playing around with is why do I feel disgusted when someone's writing something that uses AI to such a degree? And I think it's if I don't think that the human on the other side of an article had any sort of release, any sort of cathartic release, even if it's a small one in creating a piece, I don't care how great it is. I don't want to touch it. And part of that release is another R is risk. What risk was there in the person making that? So these are things that I'm now turning an eye to when I think about how something was created, because I want the content that I consume to be very human. That's the only thing I care about. I mean, that's why I'm in it. I want to be connected with others on a very real level. And yes, I know we'll all be fooled by AI content a million times over, but when we are, and if we find out about it, trust is just shattered and you can't get that back ever.
I think that the best place to leave us then is for those that are watching today. I'm going to link your thinking because what you just said is exactly what another member of this summit said in completely different words, but it's the same idea. And I think it's the core of all of this. In my conversation with Jay Klaus, he said that content creation is nothing more than the transfer of emotion. And what you just pinpointed is that if there wasn't some form of emotion behind the content that was created, writing an article, short story, you know, a short film, a feature film, ultimately it's the transfer of emotion from the creatives that are telling those stories and putting it out into the world. We're just transferring that emotion back and forth. I know that the pieces that I've been the most emotional writing, those are the ones that usually, not always, but usually get the most engagement because people feel it on the other end. And what you're pointing out is exactly the same thing in different words, that if AI generated it and there's no catharsis, there's no transfer of emotion, I don't feel anything and I don't feel like consuming it. I think that it's so important for people to understand that.
That's really good. And you said this, but I just want to be clear from my own understanding, the transfer of emotion doesn't just start from like an AI assisted piece to the reader, but it has to be from the creator, the creative into what is helping be assisted by AI. That's the transfer from human to human.
Exactly.
Yes.
Using AI to help synthesize some of those ideas, do the research, whatever it might be. But ultimately, I believe it has to originate from a place of emotion and feeling. If I'm just saying to the AI, write a Substack newsletter this week that has this structure, hits these 5 points about productivity, everybody's doing that. And it's becoming so much easier to identify it where you can, yep, that's AI, that's AI. This one's interesting. And the reason is I feel something because you can tell that person is bringing themselves into the piece. So for anybody that creates information for a living that's a content creator now or that wants to be one, if it's about synthesizing and sharing more information, I think that's a dead end road. AI is just going to eat all of those kinds of content creators alive. It's those that can bring true emotion and true storytelling. That's where I think the value is. That's why I wanted to organize this summit. And that's why I wanted to have you in the summit, because I have learned so much from this conversation. And again, barely feel like we got started, but I want to be respectful of your time, respectful of the audience's time. But Nick, this was absolutely fantastic. Before we leave, where can I send people to find you so we can help them link their thinking?
Yeah, I would just keep it easy. Go to linkingyourthinking.com, look around, and or go to YouTube and type Linking Your Thinking. Go down the rabbit hole and kind of see what's up.
Awesome. And is there anything else that you can bring to the audience as far as any kind of a guide that they might be interested in downloading or anything to help them interact with your world?
Totally. So the best free guide, the most downloaded set of notes in the entire world of all time is called Ideaverse Lite. So it's a free version of Ideaverse. If you're curious about using the note app Obsidian, you just download this folder and it's got a bunch of files in it. You open it up using Obsidian and suddenly you have this interconnected web of ideas. So you can just learn, explore, treat it like a kid would a play box or a sandbox and just see what happens.
Well, for anybody that's unfamiliar with Obsidian, it is now literally my external brain. There wouldn't be a summit without Obsidian. I would not have a year-long mastermind program without Obsidian. I would not have a Substack newsletter without Obsidian because it's helped me take all of the messy shit that's up here, all the unrealized ideas, and put them in a place where I say, huh, that's interesting. What if I explore that? Like I said, I'm still driving the Ferrari around the driveway and I have a lot to learn. But even with what I know so far, Obsidian for me has been a game changer and I'm excited to both share Obsidian, but more importantly, linking your thinking with all of them. So Nick, one more time, thank you so much for taking the time to share your knowledge and expertise with us today.
Thank you, Zach. Pleasure to be here. Honor.